Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to CrystalBallRun.com podcast, the Blog UN Network's National College Football Podcast. I am your host, Alan Kenny, co-managing editor at Crystal Ball Run, and we're previewing the American this week for our conference previews. And so I wanted to bring on my good friend Mark Ennis, who is I always joked around with him. I always said he made covering the Big East and reading about the Big East a whole lot more fun than it really should have been. And so I'm happy to have him on, though, to talk with us about the new evolution of the Big East. So let's go ahead and bring him in. Mark, what's going on, buddy?
Alan, it's good to talk to you again. I actually really enjoy these. For the off season and for the summer, I sort of have tent posts that get me through, and talking with you and then writing something for one of your blog partners there, the Leather Helmet stuff. They usually ask me to write something about Louisville in the summer, and that's when I know I'm moving squarely into the off season.
Yeah, supposedly your buddies there at SB Nation, I think the other day they did a story saying that we're past the halfway point, so we don't have that much farther to go. I mean, it feels like a long way, though.
This, you know what's funny? You feel it as a blogger. I know you know how this is.
Oh, yeah. Summer,
but it's really bad when you're on the radio, too. you have to hope that somebody does something stupid every day, or you're screwed, because you just can't do radio talking about baseball.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, you know, that's why, like, the Petrino thing last year was just manna, I'm sure, for you guys. But
that's really true. It's funny, for as annoying, and I think you agree with me in saying it was annoying, for as annoying as all conference realignment was, it was free blog and radio show prep nonstop.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You could do anything about it. And I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, the American obviously is a conference that got batted and pinballed around quite a bit during realignment. You know, I guess one of the big questions that I have now going forward with this conference is all the concern about everything that's going on off the field, on the business side and everything. I mean, is that going to continue to – do you feel like that's going to overshadow kind of what's happening on the field in the conference?
I think I had that thought and that fear until this ACC grant of rights. And it's funny. Like, I think we're going to look back at the ACC agreeing to that grant of rights as like the BC-AD delineation point of conference realignment, because where the Americans stood, both geographically and in terms of sort of who's good – they were sort of the feeder for everything that happened downstream. And so if the ACC was going to get kind of picked apart, the former Big East, the American, you know, they would be the ones that moved up into that spot if anybody was to move. So now that the ACC is set and settled, there's really nowhere for these teams to go. So now I'm not as worried about it as I was a month ago. And I think that what we see right now, once the moves that happen after this year happen, I think this is going to be the conference for the next decade at least.
Yeah, and I want to go ahead. Let's talk about some of the teams, you know, get right into it. I thought a really underrated story from the NFL draft that nobody really picked up on was there were a lot of good players produced by UConn and Rutgers. I mean, and specifically, seemed like they were coming off the defensive side of the ball. So what I'm wondering is, you know, can Paul Pasqualoni and Kyle Flood continue to kind of replenish that side?
I think if I had to say, I think that Rutgers and Kyle Flood, they have a better chance of continuing to do that than UConn does, only because they get to recruit there in New Jersey, and they've done a really good job of doing that. And really, Kyle Flood got that job to finish off that class 2 years ago and did a great job. So I think they have a lot of young talent that they've signed the last 3 years. They should continue to be good defensively. UConn, I think, will look back at the years following Edsel's departure and wonder, how do we not have more to show for what ended up being, I think, 6 or 7 NFL draft picks on a defense, and Don Brown as the defensive coordinator, who I think is still one of the best kept secrets in college football.
Absolutely.
You know, they had that, and that defense was nasty, really nasty. I mean, you look back at like, for instance, with Louisville, the season they had, they ended up winning the Big East. Teddy Bridgewater played way better against Florida than he did against UConn. And that doesn't really make a lot of sense to a lot of people. And I know he got hurt in that game, but even before that happened. They confused him. They played much better coverage, I thought, than Florida did. UConn has been loaded with guys that have NFL caliber talent, and now I don't think it's really been all that replaced. And now Don Brown is gone, and I think the immediate future for UConn is pretty bleak.
Yeah, it really doesn't look good. And of course, Rutgers is selling also that move to the Big Ten. Are either of these teams going to have any firepower on offense?
No. I mean at least UConn sort of read the writing on the wall. De Leon's not going to be the play caller anymore. And really was just a sad waste of one of the best defenses in the country. I mean, UConn was statistically was as good as any of the SEC defenses that we're used to, anything like that. And they just unimaginative, very straightforward, stubbornly doing things they weren't good at. I mean, they ran the ball out of the I formation, kind of downhill, first and second down, very predictable, and they were never good at it. It was just rough to watch. And now some of those best players are gone, and they don't have a defense that they can rely on now. And I think I think UConn is going to be rough next year. Now, Rutgers has recruited pretty well the last few years, and so as long as somebody can just be competent at quarterback, they ought to be okay. They should be decent, but neither of them is going to be confused, for Texas A&M or Oregon or something.
Yeah, now let's talk about Cincinnati, the Bearcats. Do you think that these people understand what they're inheriting with Tommy Tuberville?
No. I kind of get the feeling it's both ways. I don't particularly think Tommy Tuberville knows what he's getting either.
Yeah.
I mean, Alan, I know you pay attention to everybody like I do. Of all the off-season coaching moves, and you got to remember, with last summer, all the coaching moves and the conference moves were kind of intertwined. Mm-hmm. You think back, Louisville, there's no way, and I say this as a fan, there's no way Louisville is able to retain Charlie Strong if they're not making that move to the Aces. Mm-hmm. And suddenly that made sense. Now, on the flip side, how in the world Cincinnati was able to get Tommy Tuberville to leave Texas Tech to come to Cincinnati, given that it was obvious at that point that Cincinnati was going to be on the outside looking in terms of conference situation going forward. That of all the moves, it made the least sense to me, and I'm the least sure about it going forward. I don't know what they are going to look like or how he's going to handle Cincinnati being what they are, because Butch Jones was a salesman. I think he really embraced the kind of the underdog role and made with his own energy a lot of Cincinnati go. And I just don't think Tuberville is any of those things.
Yeah, I mean, this was one of those moves that was just flabbergasting to me, for, like you said, for both sides. I mean, Tuberville, he has it's not that I don't think he can coach, and it's not that, I mean, he hasn't had success in the past, but this is a guy, it just seems like he's kind of just left situations in awkward. I mean, you can't get more awkward than dining and dashing on a recruiting trip, but he's just kind of left situations in odd circumstances. I mean, even when he left Auburn, it was kind of weird. I mean, and he's just kind of a strange guy, but
he never wanted, he never really, I think history will show, he never really wanted to be at Texas Tech.
No, uh-uh.
And really, if he had just played his cards right a little bit more, he might have the Miami job right now. Yeah. Instead. But he is to leave Texas Tech like he did, even if that dine and dash story isn't true, just to leave them, to up and leave them for Cincinnati.
Yeah.
But you look at what they lose, a lot of players off that team from last year. They're going to look different. And he's got Eddie Grand is now going to be his offensive coordinator. Eddie Grand's never been an offensive coordinator. Really was always on staffs because he was a good recruiter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Cincinnati's going to look like. And it's odd to kind of be in that situation, because I'll give Cincinnati credit for this. When you are upwardly mobile or upwardly ambitious and you're Cincinnati, you've got to get your coaching hires right every time.
Absolutely.
And they have. I mean, they started with, look at their coaches, Mark D'Antonio, Brian Kelly, Butch Jones. Mm-hmm. Now the coaches at Michigan State, Notre Dame, Tennessee. You know, they're doing a good job hiring coaches. I just don't know if Tuberville kind of steps right in and keeps it going. I don't know.
Yeah, it really is bizarre. Let's go to the other end of the spectrum from Tuberville. You know, you've got that Latino heartthrob down there at Memphis, Justin Fuente, out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, running things down there. Any hope for this program whatsoever?
Not in the short term. You know, I think that they were really going to benefit from the moving to the Big East the way it was going to be. And now they probably lost like the most of sort of the hope. They were going to get basketball into a league with Louisville and with Georgetown and Marquette and Cincinnati and mm-hmm. UConn. You know, that was going to be really good for them. And then football, they were going to get some of their regional rivals back. They were going to get Louisville, who is, you know, kind of a longtime rival. Mm-hmm. But we're still going to have a chance to be competitive. And now they're kind of, it's a really a lateral move plus Cincinnati and UConn. So I feel like a lot of the wind got taken out of those sales for Memphis, and people just don't appreciate the historically bad job Larry Porter did.
Oh God. Yeah.
For the years that he was there, you know, playing Fred Smith's kid at quarterback just because he was Fred Smith's kid, you know, stuff like that. You know, Louisville, Charlie Strong's first year, that was not a good football team. And they beat Memphis, like, I think 56-0. And I don't think Bilal Powell got tackled. Nah. It was one of the worst teams I've ever seen. And last year, they showed some signs. They showed a little bit of life. They won a couple games, showed some fight. But it's just going to be a long, long road for them to get the local fans back, because it's been several years now since they were even decent. And at least once Louisville and Rutgers are gone and the conference sort of is what it is, I think they'll have a chance to be a little bit more competitive. But as bare a cupboard as a coach has ever inherited in a non-probation type situation, that's what Justin Fuente got. And I think he's a really good coach. Mm-hmm. And I think if he does anything at all at Memphis, he'll write himself a blank check to the next job. But he really has his work cut out for him there. And I think there's still at least 2 years away from being a bowl team.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like you said, though. I mean, so few people would have seen Memphis in the past few years to understand. I mean, under Porter, they were horrendous. So, I mean, yeah, Fuente has such a tall hill to climb there. Let's go down to Texas. Houston and SMU, two newcomers to the league. I guess kind of everybody's a newcomer technically, but you know what I mean. Houston, SMU, the two Texas teams. Who gets off to the better start in their first year?
I think Houston does, because I think that even though it's, you know, year two of the Tony Levine filling in, you know, for mm-hmm. Kevin Sumlin, I thought they kind of took all their lumps at once last year. New head coach. They finally had a new quarterback after his name escapes me now. I feel bad.
Case Keenum.
Yes, yeah. Casey had been there for what, 6 years?
Yeah, 6 years.
So Pylon comes in. They took all their lumps. They fired their offensive coordinator after week one. Remember that last year?
Yeah.
But by the end of the year, I thought offensively they were kind of back to what they were under Sumlin. I think Levine is like Texas Kyle Flood. Like, he's the local guy, and he kind of got the job to keep things rolling. He's not going to win the Super Bowl. He's not going to win the national championship, but he's good, and I think the locals like him. And I think they've got some players there that he inherited a much better situation, I think, than some of the other coaches in the American now. So I think they'll be good next year. But I'm much more interested in SMU.
Yeah, very.
For one reason, you have June Jones and Hal Mumme together at SMU. New quarterback, no Zach Line, no Marcus Hunt on defense blocking field goals and extra points. So I'm very interested in seeing what they look like, sort of letting Hal Mumme be the play caller again.
I know. It's kind of one of those things where it has the potential to either be unbelievable or just a complete disaster. Because, I mean, Mummy, you know, it's kind of funny. I'm sure you read Chris Brown's big article on the kind of the evolution of the air raid. And he wrote about how all the air raid guys tend to have kind of a self-destructive streak or iconoclastic. And you know, Mummy and June Jones, I mean, those that could end up being two strong personalities that, like, just completely explode. But
right.
I mean,
and it's funny. People, I think, maybe lazily might think they're the same. You know, June Jones is like a hardcore Mouse Davis,
yes,
run and shoot guy. And that's not How Mummy. How Mummy is an air raid, and they're not the same thing. But then you add in this dynamic that How Mummy is kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, kind of the iconoclastic, self-destructive. They all do it for the most part. And then you add in that kind of that dynamic where everybody knows June Jones really doesn't want to be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. He had the Arizona State job 2 years ago before the AD stepped in and kiboshed it for Todd Graham. And I think everybody really knows June Jones really doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
So, hey, like you said, this could be very fun to where those two kind of mad scientists together, like some kind of craziness, or, you know, you could have like Buddy Ryan punching. Gosh, I feel really bad forgetting his name now too. The offensive coordinator for the Giants
Wasn't it Gilbride? Do we punch?
Yes, Kevin Gilbride. Yeah. Yes, punt, you know, yeah. You could have. I could see just as easily see June Jones and Hell Mummy. So I could see either, but for the future of this conference, the American in the future version, the 2014 and beyond version, they really need the Texas teams and the Florida teams to be good. So I hope, sort of for the perception of the league going forward, I hope that both those situations work out, because if the two Texas teams, the two Florida teams are good, it should be a pretty good conference for what it is.
Yeah, you mentioned the two Florida teams, and we've talked a lot about coaching hires. You know, obviously we said Cincinnati had kind of an odd one. Did anybody hit a more mammoth grand slam than South Florida with Willie Taggart?
No. I think Willie Taggart was not only the best hire of the offseason last year, he's probably the best, like, perfect fit between person and time and job since Kentucky hired John Calipari. Like, it's perfect for what it is. And I think Willie Taggart is going to do wonderful things at South Florida. That guy he's Jim Harbaugh. He's everything Jim Harbaugh is, and he's in his hometown. You know, he played at Manatee High School right outside. He, you know, when he was growing up, USF didn't even play football. You know, that's his place, and I think it's I will be interested to see what happens to UCF, because I think USF is probably not as good right now, but they the future to me. For USF with Willie Taggart, they're much better. I take Willie Taggart 10 times before I take George O'Leary.
Yeah. I mean, Central Florida, they're kind of in a – I mean, you know, they're one of those programs that kind of float around that everybody kind of looks at, I think, and says, I mean, there's potential there. But, I mean, between O'Leary and there's this just bad karma kind of hanging over the – I mean, what do you see the future looking like for them?
I will admit kind of my biases. I don't like George O'Leary.
Yeah.
I think he's a despicable person, and I think he's abusive. I think he had a hand in a kid dying. You know, I don't like him. And so I don't, this is just when I put my fan hat on, I don't root for George O'Leary. I don't care for him as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he's that great of a coach. I think he's pretty good. But I think UCF has a ceiling lower than it ought to be as long as he's the head coach. I just don't think he's that great. I think you hire him when you know you're going to be terrible and you're going to give a guy several years and he will attract some pretty good players and make you a pretty good team. But I feel like UCF's ceiling is far higher than it ought to be. And, you know, I was of the opinion they should have canned the guy after all the stuff happened with Ken Caldwell, and they got in trouble. They should have just got rid of him and hired Bobby Petrino, because that would have been perfect. Bobby Petrino in Florida, low expectations. And the one thing UCF has going for it, it's enormous. And I think they do have a lot of fan intensity. maybe underestimated. They have a lot. I feel like if they had kind of an exciting style of play and like an iconic kind of coach, people would really rally, and they would be kind of a handful for the rest of the teams in Florida. But as long as he's there, I'm not a fan. I think they'll be really good this year, but kind of in spite of him. I'm not an O'Leary guy at all.
Yeah, and to me, the George O'Leary resume jokes, man, they never, ever get old. I could tell them all day long. I don't know what it was about that was so funny to me, but that was just one thing. I never, ever got past it. So,
well, you know, if you've ever watched any video of him testifying in the Plancher trial, the poor kid that died at practice at UCF because of a sickle cell trait, you know, O'Leary went in there with like a strategy of, I'm very dumb. And when he testified, you watch his testimony, the video of it, it's appalling that he played as dumb as possible. And I've just sort of never forgiven him for that.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a good coach. I mean, you look at his teams, they've never been great. They've never been terrible.
Yeah.
And that's what UCF is, as long as he's there. Okay, but not terrible. And that, to me, either USF or UCF, if they would just get somebody that would sort of harness things and take it seriously, one of them could be really good because they're right there on the I-4 corridor where Florida and Florida State and Miami are not. Mm-hmm. And they're right there in the middle, and one of them could just own that. And even if they just got the second and third best guys all over the place, they could field they could be Boise State in this new league. And one of them has to do it. And as long, I think with Taggart, USF's got a much better chance of being that than UCF does with O'Leary.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Taggart is just so impressive. I'm really, really bullish on South Florida. But let's go ahead. Let's move on to your Cards. Now, this is going to be their only year in the American, heading off for the ACC. I think everybody kind of looks at Louisville as the clear favorite here. But before we get into the team, let's talk a little bit about Charlie Strong. We saw him turn down Tennessee in the offseason to stay. I mean, can we assume at this point that Strong's in it for the long haul there?
I think so. I think because of a couple things. Louisville kind of hit an inside straight last year where they got Charlie to stay because they got to the ACC in kind of a miracle life raft for them, and then they hit it big with a couple of local recruits. And when all of those things kind of happened at once, you kind of got the sense, okay, this guy's going to stay here. And I think one thing people need to remember with Charlie is he just signed an enormous extension, and I think he's the fifth highest paid coach now. He makes $3.5 million a year. But he's 53. He's not a young man, even though he looks like the Incredible Hulk.
I was going to say, you'd never know it, but yeah.
He looks crazy. Younger than me.
Yeah,
and I'm 34, but you know, he's not a young man. He's 53. And I think that, the person, Charlie, you know, for a guy that got passed over so many times, and I like to remind people that Minnesota picked Tim Brewster over Charlie Strong. I think he feels a little bit of that chip on his shoulder about getting passed over. I think he knows race was a component sometimes. And if you look, he has a lot of young black coaches on his coaching staff. And I think he now and has kind of viewed Louisville as a chance to groom his own assistants to be head coaches. And I think his age and now his opportunity to kind of groom some of his assistants. Kenny Carter almost got, I think, the Toledo job last year. Mm-hmm. You know, the chance to groom his assistants to be head coaches and his limited time really left to be a head coach. Well, I think he'll stay here, and this is kind of his chance to build a legacy.
Now, do you look at the Cards as, I mean, can we consider this a legit national championship-type contending team?
I think so. I think the Sugar Bowl helped immensely. I think if you are not, you know, kind of one of the power teams where the expectations are for you to be able to do that every year, you kind of need a perfect storm of things to happen. You need a 2-year run. And that whole first year is like you prime the pump. That's what Boise did. Mm-hmm. Then you need an impressive bowl victory over a team that people respect. And then you enter the next year with a chance. Mm-hmm. And that's what Louisville did last year. They went 10-2, then they beat the SEC's on paper at least the second best team in Florida in the Sugar Bowl and beat them handily. Mm-hmm. And now they enter the year that in only 8 players that really played significant snaps from that team last year are gone. Everybody else is back. The schedule, not only is it not as strong, it gets weaker, and they're going to enter in the top 10 or at 10 at the worst. And so they're going to be in striking distance of having a chance. But, I don't have rose-colored glasses. I won't pretend. I don't think there's any way people still control 2/3 of this, let them get into the championship game unless everybody's just really not good.
Yeah.
You know, unless next year nobody goes undefeated but Lowell, you know, and something like that. I think that when things are even, they're going to pick somebody over them. And you know, I'm not a homer about this. It would not be unfair to them given the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be their issue. I mean, you know, it's actually – Boise State's a good comparison. I mean, they were kind of always, you know, seen as, you know, kind of the last pick, so to speak. And so, you know, I mean, they won't have a lot of margin for error, but it is a good team. I mean, all they can do is win every game, and they've certainly got a pretty good shot. But one of the things that seemed to kind of fail them at times last season to me watching them was they just – the running game seemed to sputter at times. I mean – do you think that they've – what's being done to fix that?
Well, I think that a couple of things happened, because if you look at the beginning of the year, they really stayed pretty balanced and ran the ball pretty well the first 7 games of the year. And then it was a, kind of a cacophony of things. They played the better defenses on their schedule in the second half. They played Rutgers and they played UConn and they played Syracuse, which actually ended up being pretty decent teams at the end. Then Sonoris Perry, who was the leading rusher and kind of the big play guy, tore his ACL against Syracuse. So they didn't have him for any of the last 3 games. And then they had one offensive line injury and they kind of shuffled, and it really just seemed to mess everything up. And then against Florida, it's kind of funny, they actually ran the ball decently well against Florida once they had the lead.
So, yeah, well, yeah.
I think that they I think the offensive line brings back 3 out of 5 guys. They just have to replace the center and the left tackle, and they really like the left tackle. Dominique Brown is back this year. He sat out all of last year with a knee injury. So I think the running game should be fine. But, you know, I'll be honest with you, Alan, and this is probably just sort of being naive. I don't really know why they would want to spend a lot of time running the ball. And it's not – I'm not being dumb in saying that. If you watch the Sugar Bowl, Louisville's not going to play a better defense than they played in the Sugar Bowl. And if Florida can't cover Devontae Parker and Damian Copeland and Eli Rogers and the tight ends, and they couldn't, why would you even fool with it against teams that aren't ever going to be as good as Florida? I mean, I would just think Louisville would just run the ball enough – to say that they did it and just let Teddy throw the ball.
Well, yeah, and that brings me to really the you know, the highlight of this team to me. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater, the quarterback, he's such a he's so fun to watch, and I mean, he's such a tough guy too. I mean, I got to think that this will be his last year there. But I mean, you know, playing in the American, you know, I mean, do you think that that's the kind of league where he'll be able to generate enough buzz to potentially make a Heisman run?
No. You know, I think that he would have to put up – here's what I know. He would have to put up some absolutely absurd numbers. And even if he did that, he would have to do it against some decent teams, and he's just not going to get that. But also – Charlie is a conservative guy. Now, Charlie will go for it on fourth down. He'll go for it in overtime. He'll fake punts. But when it comes to player personnel, he's not – if Louisville gets leads in some of these games, Teddy's coming out.
Yeah.
If you go back to the opener against Kentucky last year, Louisville had 32-7 in the third quarter, 8 minutes to go in the third quarter. Teddy came out. And that's the sort of thing I think that if they get to do that against – some of the teams on the schedule next year, he's just not going to have big enough numbers. I wouldn't be shocked if he got an invite, because I think he is going to have a really good statistical year, and Louisville's going to be kind of at the top. But just like the national championship, the level of competition is just, the question about it is just going to be too big for people to actually vote him. But I think he'll be up there, and I think he'll be one of the top draft picks. He just is a really special – you know, every program has kind of those transcendent guys that kind of you're like, wow, I can't. We're really lucky we got this guy.
Yeah,
and he is that guy. He's the Tebow of Urban Meyer's tenure, or you know, or the Vince Young of mm-hmm. Mack Brown's time. He is that for Louisville, and he'll go down as one of the most beloved players Louisville's ever had.
I mean, he's such a fun player to watch. So that's one guy I'm definitely pulling for this year. But I know that I think we've established Louisville as the clear favorite. If you had to pick one team out there that you think is the biggest maybe dark horse threat to the Cards, who's it going to be?
It's funny. I just spent 10 minutes kind of bad poor mouthing the guy, but it probably is Central Florida.
Yeah,
because they don't play Cincinnati. And they get the Big East kind of holdovers. They get Connecticut and Rutgers in South Florida all at home. So their schedule-wise, they have a pretty favorable schedule for what they're going to do. They play Louisville up here in Louisville, but it's on a Friday, and they get the week off before.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of works out well for them. They return a lot of that defense, which was pretty good. That's kind of O'Leary's thing, is defense. And they were pretty good, and they've got probably the second best quarterback in the Big East in Blake Bortles. A guy had over 3,000 yards passing last year, took the job from George Godfrey, which I think a lot of people didn't think – Jeffrey Godfrey. I don't think a lot of people thought he could do that, and he did. And so I think Central Florida probably is the best threat to Louisville. Cincinnati may be closest because I think their players just aren't afraid of Louisville. But I think that Central Florida game, it's going to be a lot of fun for people here because – Central Florida is on probation mostly because of what Ken Caldwell and Brandon Bender did in trying to steal recruits from Louisville.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of bad blood between Louisville fans and Central Florida fans over everything that happened. And it's kind of funny because you look back now, all the kids involved in the Central Florida UCF Ken Caldwell thing, not one of them ended up at UCF or Louisville. But I still think there's a ton of bad blood there. And so I think that for the 1 year we get that game, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, I'll definitely obviously be pulling for Louisville there. I really like the program. I've been really, you know, I think that, you know, I kept telling you while the deck was getting shuffled during conference realignment that I thought Louisville would make out okay. And I know that it didn't look that way for a long time, but it's such a well-run athletic department. And, you know, the fans there obviously really, really put a lot into it. And so, you know, I'm really happy to see, you know, you and all the other Cardinal fans get to, you know, kind of move on to the ACC and keep competing at a really high level.
You know, I think that in the long run, Louisville will look back and see that a couple of schools really, really, really won in realignment. I think Texas A&M is going to be a winner, and I think Louisville is going to be a winner in realignment. Yeah. For the ACC to get a grant of rights and be stable, to get things like Notre Dame on the schedule guaranteed every third year, for there probably to be an ACC network.
Mm-hmm.
At Louisville's non-revenue sports, you know, all that sort of thing, for all that to happen. I mean, the one thing I think a lot of people around here kind of pound their chest about is Louisville sort of ascended all on its own. You know, it hasn't had like conference scaffolding to sort of hold it up.
Yeah.
And so now to have that, you'd like to think that you could be even better. And I think that I really do think ultimately that Texas A&M and Louisville are going to be the two biggest winners, and maybe TCU, maybe,
mm-hmm.
Are going to be the biggest winners in all of these realignment moves. And the biggest loser will be Missouri. I think they're screwed.
Fair enough. Anyway, Mark, thanks a lot, man, for coming on. Really appreciate it. Always, always fun talking with you, man.
Well, I appreciate having me on anytime.
All right. And thank you all for joining us, too. For CrystalBallRun.com, I'm Alan Kenny. Take care.